We've all heard of the attraction of opposites, that strange pull that can exist between two totally dissimilar people, like Posh and Bex or John Major and Edwina Curry. How can we use the attraction of opposites to explain the electrophilic addition reactions of alkenes? Well, leaving our odd couples to the tabloids, you'll have learnt about the way that opposite charges attract at GCSE. The idea that plus charges attract minus charges is a very common theme in many science topics. In chemistry, we're often concerned with charged ions, and you must make sure that you know the difference between an anion and a cation. Do you? Have you just said to yourself, an anion is negatively charged, like a chloride ion in hydrochloric acid, and a cation is positively charged, just like a sodium ion in salty water? What has this attraction of opposites got to do with the reaction between neutral alkene molecules and neutral halogen molecules? Well, it lies in the idea that like charges can repel each other at a distance and so induce or bring about changes in the charge distributions close by. If you stop for a moment to think it through, every molecule has an electron cloud associated with it, and all electron clouds are negatively charged regions of space. If you bring the electron cloud of one molecule close enough to a second molecule's electron cloud, there's going to be repulsion and a slight rearrangement of the way these electron clouds are distributed in space. This is a similar idea to the one we use to explain the formation of van der Waals intermolecular forces. The rearrangement of two spherical electron clouds of two xenon atoms to form two egg-shaped electron clouds, where the fat end of one egg, the bit with more electrons in it, is next to the thin end of the other egg, the bit with less electrons in it. So, like Jack Sprat and his wife, fat attracts thin, or, to put it into electrostatic terms, the negative attracts the positive. Close your eyes and try to imagine the way electron clouds might look in a molecule of ethene and in a molecule of bromine. You should now have in your mind the sigma-shaped orbitals between carbon-carbon and carbon-hydrogen atoms in ethene and the funny dog biscuit-shaped pi bond between the two carbon atoms in this alkene. It's the dog biscuit shape that's going to be important in the reaction between bromine and ethene, because it gives its region of space a very high electron density. You know, the number of electrons divided by the volume occupied. When it comes to repelling other electron clouds, this region quite literally does take the biscuit. What about the electron cloud of a bromine molecule? Hopefully, you'll have a picture of a symmetrical sausage-shaped electron cloud. The sausage is quite squashy because each bromine atom has 35 electrons arranged in main shells, leading to large electron clouds loosely held by the central nuclei in a bromine molecule. Now do a thought experiment. Bring the squashy sausage up to the sigma and pi bond region of space in the ethene molecule. Something that must happen if chemical reactions occur when reactants collide. Bearing in mind what happens when two electron clouds come close together, can you either picture or draw the way in which the sausage-shaped electron cloud of the bromine molecule distorts? What should be clear to you is that the sausage shape has changed into a pear shape, with the thin end of the pear closest to the carbon-carbon double bond. The charge distribution of the bromine molecule is no longer symmetrical, and, with the input of a little energy, the covalent bond can be broken heterolytically. I guess that this might be a good point at which to reinforce the definitions of heterolytic and homolytic bond fission. Heterolytic fission means that the molecule splits up into an anion and a cation. On a similar note, the two people in a heterosexual relationship are of opposite gender. In homolytic fission, the bond breaks to form two particles, or free radicals, that are the same, just as the partners in a homosexual relationship are of the same gender. Remember, hetero equals different, and homo equals the same, just as it does in Greek. So, what does the heterolytic fission of a bromine molecule produce? If you've just thought of a Br cation and a Br anion, well done. Can you imagine how upset your GCSE science teacher would have been at the mere thought of a Br plus ion? That's because they're not long-lived species. They're not energetically stable, with only 6 electrons in their outer shell, and will quickly react to re-establish some kind of approximation to a full outer shell. What's close by and has a couple of electrons knocking about in a pi orbital? Well, the ethene molecule is on the spot and can provide both of the electrons in its pi bond to the electron-deficient Br plus ion, forming a dative covalent bond. That can't be the end of the story, though, can it? You've just stuck together a neutral molecule and a cation. The resultant must have a plus charge and be very reactive in its own right. This reactive, intermediate carbocation can then use the attraction of opposite charges to react with the Br minus ion that was formed in the heterolytic bond fission of the original bromine molecule. The result is 1,2-dibromoethane, made by the electrophilic addition across the carbon-carbon double bond. Electrophilic just means electron-loving, in the same way that Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. Philos is the word that the Greeks used to describe this kind of love. The electrophile is the bromine cation, and it's an addition reaction because there are no leaving groups and only one product is formed.